broadcasting live from the KSHP studios in the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. It's time to get on the right side of sports betting. It's time for the Odds Couple.
Welcome to the Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 radio in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, and simulcast on Vegas Video Network. We are live and worldwide. My name is Scott Pritchard. I'm a professional sports bettor handicapper featured on VegasInsider.com, PritchardsPicks.com, and recently Tim Donaghy, former NBA official from 1994 to 2007, ran into a bit of some trouble here not long ago, you might have heard. We can maybe talk about that a little bit. But he has a sports betting site now, and he reached out to me a few days ago. I am now featured on refpicks.com. That's Tim Donaghy's site, refpicks.com. I'm joined, as always, by Brett Grant, the GM here at KSHP AM 1400 Radio. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Let's get started with what say you. NBA regular season has concluded last night. Final games. The Utah Jazz on the road taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. They needed this game to have any shot at perhaps getting an 8 seed. It ended up being all for naught because the Rockets and the Lakers playing their game, so there was no chance the Jazz could get in, but they did not know that. So it's the last game of the year for the Jazz. We talk about the fact they've had trouble on the road, but man, oh man, how do you go on the road in a must-win game to get into the playoffs, and you score 70 points and shoot 32%?
I was just going to say the same thing, but in the locker room at halftime, they had to be pretty happy with their position. They were only down 2 points at halftime. And the third quarter, they came out and scored 13 points in the third quarter last night. And Memphis put a 25-13 run on them basically in the third quarter to open up a 14-point lead, and it was over after that. It's a horrible third quarter.
The first and third period last night for the Jazz on the road, they scored a total of 30 points. That was their undoing. You mentioned they were down only two at half. It was 40-38 at halftime. So, again, what did he tell his team? Tyrone Corbin,
he must not have told them the second half started.
I'm guessing. But, I mean, let's give some respect to the Memphis Grizzlies. This is a team that, if any team made for the playoffs, it would be the Grizzlies. They play a half-court set. No team is better defensively. Again, holding the Jazz to just 70 points for the entire game. They won by 16 points, 86-70. They were favored by 4.5.
Well, they weren't necessarily a great shooting team last night either. Only 40% in the game last night for Memphis, looking at that. But Zach Randolph, a big day, 25 points. He was 10 of 20 from the floor. And they had no answer. They couldn't stop Randolph inside. Mike Conley had a nice day on the outside with 14 points as well. The thing about this team, and you bring up a great point, is they play great defense. And I think when you look now projecting into the postseason against the Clippers and what the Clippers like to do versus Memphis, Clippers will have home court advantage. And by the way, games 1 through 4 we will carry right here on AM 1400 starting Saturday night, 7:30 Saturday night, is game 1 of that series. By the way, game 7 of that series, if it happens to happen, will be, let's see, game 1 will be Saturday, which will be what, April 20th, right?
Yes.
Okay. Game 7 projected to be Sunday, May, whatever that day is, 3rd, 4th?
Figure 2 weeks, 15 days later.
Do we need to play all these extra days off for all this stuff? They're playing 2-3 games a week now, but we can't do that in the playoffs. We have to stretch one playoff series for 16 days.
It's all about money this time of year, isn't it?
God.
Oh, it's always about money.
We'll have, what, 40 games and 40 nights, and I'll have 40 naps because I'll be like waiting for the next game to start.
Right.
It's just,
yeah, we basically have 2 months now. I mean, it's not enough. We have 6 months of regular season, November 1st now through April 20th for the regular season. And then the playoffs go basically about 7 weeks. So I mean, the 15th of June, we should have an NBA
champion. We should really move Groundhog's Day to today.
I think so.
And then we really will have 2 months more of basketball.
I like it. Yeah. I like it very much. I have to say that when you look at the Memphis Grizzlies, this team, no bench. Great coach, Lionel Hollins. I like Marc Gasol, their starting center. Mm-hmm. Conley, I like him. He's a star guard.
Right.
Bayless, pretty decent player. Tony Allen, probably the unsung hero. I see this guy as the leader of the team because he is so strong defensively. He always draws the best offensive player. But this team is thin. They have no bench. They have a distinct home court advantage, but they're on the road. Now, last year in the first round of the playoffs when they took on the same LA Clipper team, Clippers 1-7. I like Memphis winning last year. The Clippers 1-7. This year, I like the Clippers to win. So bet the Grizzlies.
There you go. We're just doing the opposite of Scott theory. It works sometimes.
It does.
You know, I mean, you're right. Their bench is thin, and they don't get a lot of production off it. I mean, Darrell Arthur's a little bit banged up. If he's healthy, he's a good rebounding force and a guy who can give them some added depth up front. And then you got guys like Austin Day and Ed Davis and Quincy Poindexter. And it's not really a all-star cast of characters coming off that bench.
And it has to do with the fact they traded away or dumped a lot of their bench earlier when they dumped their best player in Rudy Gay in a trade for Tayshaun Prince, who in his day was a pretty solid player, but not much today. But I will say in defense of Prince and in defense of that move, Prince fits in extremely well with this team. He's long, he's athletic, a very good defender, and no ego. He's not one of these guys like Gay. As good as he was, he had to get his shots. So he would take the team out of their offensive set by going one against five.
Right.
Prince, you don't have that concern.
No, and Prince will bring you double figures most nights. He didn't do that last night, but if you go back and look at what he does on the year, he's a guy that gets you 12 points a night. Plays good defense, can step out and shoot a three-point shot if he has to do it. He's the left-handed version of Jamal Wilkes. You look at him and you go, that's an ugly shot. But, oh, wait, he's got 12 points. No kidding. And it just reminds me of the others on the other side with what Wilkes used to do for the Lakers back in the day. You didn't really pay a lot of attention to him, but you look at the stat sheet going, really? 15 points and 8 rebounds? Oh, okay, it's a pretty good night. That's what Tayshaun Prince is to me.
Jamal Wilkes, a name from the past, the 70s, Lakers,
just
Showtime.
Just that shot, you know.
I like it. Ugly, but effective.
I think Tayshaun Prince's shot is kind of ugly, too.
The left-handed version of
the
Jamal
push
Wilkes.
Shot, yes.
But a player that I really like on the Memphis Grizzlies is Zach Randolph. You mentioned he had 25 points last night. He also had 19 rebounds. He's a star when it comes to blocking out, getting the offensive rebound. I think part of that has to do with the Grizzlies are not a good shooting team, lends itself to getting a lot of offensive rebounds.
Right. Well, but he's a guy who accepts his role. He can score. He also can defend. He can get dirty. And, you know, if you've got to go out and get a rebound, like you said, 19 rebounds last night, he is not afraid to do the work that needs to be done under the basket. And you need those guys, especially in the playoffs. Games, as you talked about nearly every day here, you talk about in the playoffs, the games are at a much slower pace, and you play in mud, and you've got to play great half-court defense. He had 13 defensive rebounds, and just as importantly, 6 offensive rebounds. That gives your team 6 extra offensive possessions. You get that in the playoffs, that's the difference between winning and losing when you get those offensive rebounds. And the Grizzlies had about 12 or 13, actually had 19 offensive rebounds last night. That's huge.
10 offensive rebounds for a game is very significant. To have almost double that is insane.
Yeah, no question. And when you can give your team that many extra possessions, that many extra shots, a lot of those are putbacks on a rebound, but sometimes they're kicked back out and give me 24 more seconds on the shot clock. And especially late in the game when you're maybe nursing a 3 to 5 point lead, and suddenly you get to run an extra 20 seconds or 24 seconds off the shot clock, that's huge.
Shooting percentage from the field, 45-50% oftentimes is very good. But on offensive rebounds, second shot opportunities, third shot opportunities, the shooting percentages there increase dramatically, anywhere from 60 to 70%.
Yeah, because you're usually a foot away from the basket and just putting back in, and you're making a layup or a dunk or something like that. Yeah, no question about it. And Arthur's a guy that can get you those kind of rebounds as well. In there, you know, a kid that played at Kansas, he's a powerful kid who can also do that for you.
But the Utah Jazz last night embarrassed themselves. 86-70, losing at the Memphis Grizzlies. But Al Jefferson, their star player, did his job. I mean, 22 points, 16 boards, but he couldn't do it all by himself.
No, he got no help. I mean, Millsap was 2 of 7. Mo Williams, 3 of 13. Randy Foyle was 1 of 9 in the game. Gordon Hayward was 4 of 8. They just didn't shoot it well last night. Derek Flavors, 2 of 9. Marvin Williams, 2 of 7. You can't really point to one guy and say, hey, he took too many shots, because anybody who shot last night, not named Al Jefferson, was horrible.
Well, and we talked about something that Pat Riley has said in the past, and Phil Jackson as well. No rebounds, no rings. This Memphis Grizzly team, very good rebounding team, they out-rebounded the Jazz by 10, 57-47. That's a winning recipe.
Yeah, and you're right. It's just one of those days where you protect your end of the glass, you get your rebounding taken care of, and the other team's struggling from the floor. Don't give them easy baskets. Keep pushing them away from the basket. Make them work harder for their shots. And you saw the frustration last night on the Jazz.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on the world-famous Vegas Video Network. We're live and worldwide. Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, joined by Brett Grant, the GM here at KSHP. We do field live chat questions on Vegas Video Network. We also have the studio line open if you want to talk sports, namely sports betting, 702-221-7283. That's 702-221-7283. We're talking sports betting, namely the Lakers are in the playoffs. They knocked off the Houston Rockets last night in overtime. They went from 9-8, 7th seed. That's the good news. Lakers are in the playoffs. The bad news, they get hammered as they take on the San Antonio Spurs, who are about 95% healthy, minus Boris Diaw.
The Spurs are still, you worry about them and the way they've been playing, not very well, but you know, thank goodness the Lakers made the playoffs, because I think the world would have come to an end had the Lakers not made the playoffs. I heard a stat yesterday, and I didn't look at the box score to know the difference, but since about the middle of March, you go back and look at the box scores in every Laker game, they had an advantage in every game they played from the foul line.
Interesting. As far as getting there?
Yeah.
Or as far as actually,
far as
you're going to expect
more foul shots than their opposition every game they played since about the middle of March.
That does not surprise me at all, because again, teams intentionally foul Dwight Howard, and if he's close to the basket, they're going to get to the free throw line. I guess the bigger question is, are they converting? But it bodes well. I mean, that is a winning stat, simply because if you guys like Steve Nash, that hopefully will be back for the playoffs. Steve Blake, Meeks is a 90% free throw shooter.
Right, Blake is too.
You have guys like Dwight Howard getting fouled early to get them in the bonus to where these other guys can step up and hopefully solidify a
34
win.
34-24 last night in what was obviously decided in overtime, a four-point game in overtime. Significant difference when you're getting 10 more. Now, Dwight Howard was 4 of 10 from the foul line last night, but Blake was 8 for 8. Jody Meeks was 4 of 5. Gasol is a good free throw shooter, 3 of 4 for him as well. And I don't know if it was, I hate the conspiracy theory things, but how important was it, I'll ask you, from the NBA perspective, that the Lakers are in the playoffs versus the Jazz being in the playoffs?
Well, the NBA, the league, they obviously want the high-profile, big-market cities, so they obviously love the fact that the Clippers and the Lakers are in. And David Stern, I know, is smiling. I mean, he is a...
No manipulation by making sure the Lakers made it into the postseason?
I don't think so. Not in last night's game. I mean, more
not
times...
Not last night,
not,
I'm just saying in general.
When they were
in trouble 3 weeks ago.
Well, there were definitely some questionable calls, but anytime you have a high-profile marquee player like Kobe Bryant, you're going to get the benefit of the call. Just like in Chicago, where both a couple of Chicago boys in the heyday of Michael Jordan, obviously, if he's going to the basket late in the game, he's going to get the benefit of the call. It is a star-studded league, and I'm okay with that. But getting back to your point about free throws, the fact that the Lakers have really done a good job getting to the line more than the opposition doesn't really surprise me. And last night, they had 34 free throw attempts, according to you, and the opposition. Houston only had 20. Again, the home team generally will get to the free throw line a little bit more, one of the perks of playing at home. And then you mentioned that Howard had 10 free throw attempts, so there's the disparity right there.
Right.
But this guy's going to knock down anywhere from 4 or 5, maybe 6 free throws out of the 10. What did he have last night? How many did he make out of 10?
4 of 10.
Yeah, that's about right.
Another guy. The team shot 67% from the line, and he shot 40% from the line.
Well, you look at a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder. They get so many cheap points. Look at the star player, Durant.
Right.
The guy shoots 90% from the free throw line. It's so impressive because it's not like he's shot 90 out of 100 free throws. This guy gets to the line a ton. That's what I love about the San Antonio Spurs. When they played Oklahoma City, they realized, because it's frustrating for me when I bet against the Oklahoma City Thunder, why would you foul Kevin Durant? By you fouling him 23 feet from the basket, you're just conceding, okay, well, A, I'm getting in foul trouble. B, the team's getting into the bonus. And C, I just gave away 2 points. Whereas the Spurs, the guy, look at the stat line every night when the Thunder play. The guy gets so many points. Carmelo Anthony's another one. Don't foul these guys. If they want to shoot, I mean, they're on their best day, they're going to back down 45% from the outside. Let them shoot those.
I mean, that's the number one rule in basketball. Never foul a jump shooter. So what do you, but the problem is Durant doesn't miss from anywhere. So at some point you got to put a little pressure on him. But I mean, that's a cardinal sin to foul a jump shooter. If a guy wants to take a 20, 25 foot jump shot, I'm going back the other direction. Go ahead and shoot that all day if you want
to. Well, get a hand in the face. But the thing that annoys me, Brett, is when you see guys jumping to try to block the shot. How many times have you seen a guy block a shot compared to how many times he fouls the jump shooter.
You're right. It's probably astronomically the foul versus the actual block in that regard. And, of course, the players now, they see somebody in the air, and they jump into the player, make sure they get the foul call going through. If I'm that player who's up in the air and the guy's jumping into me, I'm going to do everything I can to tackle that guy.
Exactly, right. To make sure that there's not a 3 or 4 point play possibly.
And also,
the other thing, we're seeing this more now too, if a player is going to the basket because of the continuation play, if the official blows the whistle, well, you can't call two fouls on the same play. So just make sure you take the guy out to make sure he doesn't convert a 3 point play.
The continuation play, and we saw it in college basketball now. You know, obviously the NBA has that influence on the college kids and on down the line to high school and wherever. But you saw a game late in the college basketball season in the conference tournament, I want to say in the Colonial, where there was, I'm trying to remember the teams off the top of my head. Maybe it was Richmond playing a game that they lost where the guys, everybody knows the guy is getting fouled, but it happens at half court and the foul happens and the kid just kind of throws the ball up in a 1 point game, and the referee awards him with 3 free throws because he was fouled while he was in the act of shooting.
Right.
There was no way the kid was going to shoot the ball in that particular situation. So I think there's got to be a little bit of common sense going, no, you're not shooting. I don't care that you went through the gyrations to throw up a half court shot. Your team was winning the game by 1 point. You're not going to shoot that shot ever. And we knew the foul was coming. But in the NBA, if you're, nicked or the phantom touch 30 feet from the basket, we go through our 2.5 steps or 4 and throw the ball up and he was in the act of shooting.
Well, the Lakers last night winning a very important game. They played the San Antonio Spurs, which based on perception, not my perception, but everyone else's perception, to play the Spurs, a team that's lost 7 of their last 10 games, bodes better for the Lakers if they want to advance as opposed to playing the red-hot Oklahoma City Thunder.
Let me ask you real quick, in that particular series, with the way the Spurs are playing now and the way the Lakers are playing now from a line standpoint, is the line going to present a lot of value for San Antonio because they're not playing very well right now? Do you see an adjustment where a game might have been 7 or 8 that's going to be 5 or so?
I absolutely see that, and I can't wait to hammer the Spurs. And the reason is people only remember what they saw most recently, and the media is all over the fact that the Spurs have struggled, and the media has fallen in love again with the Lakers. They're now a Cinderella team, a team that lost their best player. They've won 2 games at home. Not a big deal. They were a small dog against San Antonio. They won. Congratulations. Last night, a 3.5-point favorite. They went overtime. They won by 4. The Spurs match up extremely well with this Laker team, and it has to do with, again, oftentimes it's not who is starting, it's who do you have coming off the bench. And yes, I'm aware of what the Spurs have done, but they've been hurt. Manu Ginobili is back. Tony Parker is back. They did pick up Tracy McGrady. I don't know, the jury is out, if he's going to help this team or not, but the bench this team is so deep, and the bench players have had so much time to get it together. The only concern is, it's not a big concern, Boris Diaw helps that team. He's out until probably the second round of the playoffs because of back surgery. But this team, Greg Popovich, will have the Spurs ready to go, locked and loaded. The Lakers without Kobe Bryant, I'm telling you, the Spurs win this convincingly.
Well, in the 2 games they played with Kobe Bryant, the Lakers lost by 2 points and I think 3 points in those 2 spots. And then they beat the Spurs without Kobe Bryant. So I think on the other side, people can say, well, the Lakers really match up well with the Spurs. But you think that's going to be the opposite of exactly what's going to happen come
exactly
playoff
right
time.
I think it's an overlay on the Lakers and an underlay. I mean, the Spurs are not getting any respect. And the fact is, the Lakers, without Kobe, they've won 2 games at home. So we'll see what happens when they go to San Antonio. I was at that game early in the year when the Lakers had all their horses and the Spurs won by 2 late in the contest. Danny Green hit a 3-pointer. They were down 1 with 9 seconds to go. He nailed a wide-open 3. So I think based on lack of chemistry issues for the Lakers, lack of a bench, and lack of talent, the Spurs win this convincingly. So it's been a fun ride for the Lakers. I mean, that's what I want to talk about, okay? Kobe Bryant last night. I was one of the few people, I was one of many people who said a few short months ago that the Lakers would not make the playoffs, and I bet the fact that the Lakers would not make the playoffs at even money, minus 110, either way, that the Lakers would not. And then they proceeded to lose 6 consecutive games, and it moved from pick to minus 250 that they would not make the playoffs. So Kobe Bryant at that time, you know, openly admitted that he guaranteed that his team, the Lakers, would make the playoffs. What would you expect for him to say? I respectfully disagreed and said, listen, I put my money where my mouth is, and I said, listen, I'm betting that the Lakers would not make the playoffs. Well, they made the playoffs. Congratulations. But the fact is, this team going into the season, they were picked, co-picked with Oklahoma City to represent and be number one in the Western Conference and fight for an NBA title. So the fact that they're a seventh seed in the Western Conference, congratulations. But I mean, the bar, I guess, was pretty low after all. If Kobe Bryant, you saw it last night after the Jazz lost, he tweeted, hey, some people doubted us. It's like, we're still doubting you. You haven't done anything. You're a seventh seed in the Western Conference. You were favored to win the Western Conference before the season started.
I think he's looking for a participation ribbon.
That you might.
Know, we made it.
Certificate
Woo-hoo!
Of appreciation.
We did it. Yes, we survived. We're number seven. It's been a very disappointing year for the Lakers, and you can point to about 1,200 different reasons why it was a disappointing season, from the coaching problems early in the year, firing their coach, and then going through trying to, and then they hire a coach that nobody was really sold on, who came in hurt and couldn't coach for another week until he was ready to go. So you had three different guys coaching the team. Then you had an array of injuries and other issues that went along the way, and now your best player is out on a team that really, you can say they're talented, but they're a dysfunctional unit, and I don't necessarily see that coming together in cohesion to pull off an upset. I know I was listening to some shows yesterday, both locally and nationally, where people think the Lakers can give the Spurs a series or even beat them or perhaps upset them, and I'm thinking, not a chance. I just don't see it happening. This is not a one-game series. It's not the NCAA basketball tournament. You've got to beat the Spurs four times, and that means you got to beat them at least once in San Antonio, and more than likely you're going to have to beat them twice in San Antonio. The Lakers are not a good road team, and the Spurs, we know, can be a very good road team. Yeah, they're not playing well right now overall, and maybe that's the one little, thorn in the side of where maybe the Spurs could go down, is the fact that they are not playing well right now. They got to turn it around and fix that issue pretty quick. And I think maybe Pop's laying in the weeds and saying, don't worry, guys, we got this. We've been here before. But this Spurs team has been a highly seeded team in the past, last year, and did not make a run in the postseason to get to the finals when they were expected to be in the finals. So expectation-wise, pressure now on the Spurs versus the Lakers, who are without their star player. And when you don't have that pressure and you're able to play free and easy, that's the kind of basketball you want to be able to play. So it'll be interesting to see how the Spurs come together after not playing well for 2.5-3 weeks versus a Laker team that's got nothing to lose right now.
The big reason why the Spurs have not played well down the stretch, again, without Parker, without Manu Ginobili, and they've been resting players here and there, so that's been a concern. They are well rested, and for the first time in a long time, they're healthy with the exception of Boris Diaw. But this Spurs team a year ago, they were on fire. They had won 18 consecutive games, including the playoffs. They won 10 consecutive games. They made it to the Western Conference Finals and won the first two games against Oklahoma City before the Thunder came on like a house on fire and won 4 consecutive games. I see this Spurs team as a better team than they were a year ago. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, as good as they are, not as good because they're without James Harden. That's going to be a battle. And plus, my personal opinion, objectively speaking, yes, I have a future bet on the Spurs because I bet numbers at +2.5 on them to win the Western Conference. I really felt that they would have the number one seed. Well, they don't. I'll take that anyway, because the fact is they have an easier road. They're playing the Lakers without their best player, Kobe Bryant, in a 7-game series. And then in the second round, they get to play Denver, a team that cannot, will not win on the road, and their team is not conducive to the style of NBA postseason basketball. Whereas the Thunder, as good as they are, I expect them to win handily against the Houston Rockets in the first round. But in the second round, taking on the winner of Memphis, a playoff team, or the Clippers. I lean on the Clippers with home court to win that series. And so the Clippers, I would rather play the Nuggets than the Clippers.
I think it makes sense.
I think that'll be a good competitive series between the Clippers and the Thunder.
I agree with you. And I think the thing about, and I don't know if there's going to be any upsets. Can a team like Golden State pull off an upset? Can they beat Denver in the first round? Do you see anybody other than Memphis as a five seed, who's really very even. The same record, ironically, as the Clippers, right? Those two teams had the same record.
And again, last year, it's a rematch. I mean, these two teams, last year, Memphis was favored, and of course, the Clippers beat them in a seven-game series. And yet, as far as the Warriors go, again, they mirror one another. The Nuggets and the Warriors, as far as running and gunning, carefree-style basketball, that bodes well in the regular season in December, does not bode well April and May because it's a half-court set. So I like the Nuggets to definitely knock off the Warriors. Okay. Steph Curry, how about him? Setting a record, right? Three-pointers made.
Hey, if you keep shooting them, you're eventually going to break the record, right? He's a great player. I make fun, but was a great player to watch at Davidson and now here in the NBA. Unfortunately, he stuck out in Golden State where people don't get a chance to see him very much. But if he was in New York or Boston, somewhere like that, he would be a guy that would have a ton of exposure. What are your thoughts on the Eastern Conference playoffs?
It's the Miami there? Heat. Don't even watch.
No other matches matter?
It doesn't matter because at the end of the okay. If you advance, you get to play the Miami Heat eventually.
Eventually.
And so the only thing you can hope for is an injury, okay, to one of the big three. That's the only shot that anyone in the Eastern Conference has to knock off the Heat four times in a seven-game series. The Heat, the favorite, obviously, in the Eastern Conference, so I don't know if I'll even watch. I mean, because it's the Heat, and it's a matter of who's going to come out of the West. I think it's going to be one of two teams. I mean, people will tell you there's a lot of parity in the Western Conference. I don't see it. It's Oklahoma City or San Antonio will represent the Western Conference. I'm hopeful that it'll be San Antonio, and I'll tell you why. This team is healthy with a capital H, all right? The Oklahoma City Thunder, everything went their way. They have not had any injury concerns in what they finish. One, maybe two games better than the San Antonio Spurs. But that home court is big. If there is a Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals, that's a big deal. I mean, the Thunder will be favored by 5, 5.5, 6 points, depending upon what happens between now and then.
Makes sense.
So we're talking here, sports betting, odds couple, KSHP, AM 1400 radio, simulcast on Vegas Video Network. My name is Scott Pritchard, founder of PritchardsPicks.com, joined with Brett Grant. We're here Monday through Friday. Tomorrow, Anthony Padilla will be with us for the odds couple. We ask that you continue to tune in. Keep those live chat questions coming. And the studio line, 702-221-7283. It's time for Spin to Win. This is where we hone in on one game. No pro basketball today, so we have a Major League Baseball game, the Rays taking on the Orioles. The over-under for this game is 7.5. Now, this is called Spin to Win, and this is the part of the show where we are forced to argue one point. I mean, the idea here is to always think with your head, bet with your head, never your heart. Emotions cloud judgment. I'm going to spin to win. If it's going to land on over or under, I'm going to have to sell it. Brett automatically has to take the other side because the smart bettor knows that you should be able to make an argument for either team. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you want to have a edge before you step up to the bet window.
Which game are we doing? Which game?
We're doing the Rays versus the Orioles.
All right.
The total is 7.5. I'm going to give you some time here as I have the over. All right. Well, this is interesting because the Rays for the year, 7 of their 11 games have gone under. Okay, I'm selling the over, but 7 of their 11 games have gone under the posted total. And the Orioles for the year, they're 6 overs. They have 6 overs, 6 unders. And what's interesting here is 2 of their 3 games at home for Baltimore have gone over. So the home team, the fact that the Orioles are at home, 2 of their 3 games have gone over. It's a relatively low number. We're talking 7.5. Now, in the National League, we know 7 is a key number. In the American League, 9 is a key number. Now, based on the pitching matchups between these two teams, Tampa Bay, they have Price going against Gonzalez. We're looking at, Price has been a big-time disappointment. And history has a way of repeating itself. This guy's ERA is 5.82. The guy's a star. Eventually, he's going to come around. But, wow, how do you not play the over 7.5? Red Rover, play the over 7.5.
Hey, you're going to give me the Cy Young Award winner against a team that he has dominated against, a guy who handles the Baltimore Orioles most of the time. I think he's 6-2 in his career.
That's all in the past.
Against there, no, it's form, baby, form. Give me form. I like the Rays in the under in this situation going through. The Baltimore Orioles have not hit David Price very well, so I don't expect them to score a lot of runs in this particular spot against him. So I like the matchup here with Price, even though he has not been great thus far this season. A lot of times it just comes down to, oh, thank goodness, there's a team I know I can beat and I know I can shut down. And for that reason, David Price, complete game, under the total.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about form. I'm with you, but I'm more about current form. And the current form for this clown Price, I hate to say it.
This clown, the Cy Young Award winner.
Yeah, exactly. That was last year, okay?
He's been rocked
this year, and I'm still a little emotionally upset because he cost me some money early this year.
I had the other side. I loved him getting
you were betting the over. I was betting the under, so not good.
Well, as you mentioned, with this particular team, though, they play a lot of unders thus far. Now, the Orioles are, I think, 6-6-2 on the season to the over, where the Rays have gone only four of their games this year have gone over the total, right? So,
well, the Orioles at home, all five games have gone under. I'm going with the law of averages. I'm going over, baby.
Okay, you're
going 7.5. I think
you're
going
with the do factor.
One time.
Right.
Because I have to. Okay. I have to make an argument.
It's all about the wheel.
It is. Whatever the wheel says. You're listening to The Odds Couple on Vegas Video Network and KSHP AM 1400 right here in beautiful Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada. Scott Pritchard alongside Brett Grant. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Have you ever thought you should be on the radio? Or have you considered doing an online video show or podcast? If so, now is your only chance to do both at the same time. KSHP and the Vegas Video Network have teamed up to provide the only multi-camera broadcast quality video and live radio simulcast in Las Vegas. And instead of having your show played at some ungodly hour, the KSHP Vegas Video Network partnership is producing shows that play from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Imagine having your own radio show broadcasting to the entire Las Vegas Valley, and combine that with an online presence that is viewed in all 50 states and 150 countries, both live and on demand. This is a first and an outstanding opportunity to give voice to your business, your ideas, and your talent. If you'd like your own show on KSHP and the Vegas Video Network, contact us today at 221-1200. That's 221-1200.
Welcome back to The Odds Couple on Vegas Video Network and KSHP AM 1400 Radio. Scott Pritchard with Brett Grant. Together, we are The Odds Couple. We would like for you to reach out to us on our show. Go to Vegas Video Network. Email us at oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. That's oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. Also, we would love to hear your voice on our show through web-based voicemail. Go to our site, Vegas Video Network. On the right-hand side, a red bar. In the middle of the page, a green bar. Start recording. We also field live chat questions. We have the live chat up and running as we speak. And then also, if you do miss us live, no worries. You can reach out to us via Vegas Video Network, YouTube, iTunes, Roku. We're here Monday through Friday. The studio line is open right now, 702-221-7283. If you have any questions in regards to sports, namely sports betting, 702-221-7283. We also broadcast the Clippers, the Dodgers, BYU football, and the Dallas Cowboys during football season. Later today, big news, we'll be finding out who is playing whom for the upcoming. We already know the opponents for the NFL season, but we're going to get the specific schedule. It will be announced a little bit later today. Now, you don't have to look far to find frustration in sports, namely sports betting. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? Have
you watched baseball in Southern California so far this season? Are you kidding me? The Angels, we know, have won four games this year. The Dodgers, on the other side, have lost four games to the Padres. Are you kidding me? This Padre team has won five games all year, four of them against the Dodgers, who've now lost, by the way, five of their last six games, all in division. And a team that we paid, not we, that Magic Johnson and Stan Kasten put $2 billion, that's with a B, $1 billion on for the sale of, and they can't beat the lowly Padres. Now, you can maybe point to, well, if Zach Greinke didn't get injured last week, we would have won some games. Well, he's a pitcher. He pitches one every five games out, and they lost, obviously, in his what would have been his start a couple of days ago where Chris Capuano went out. But against the Padres, they gave up 6 runs, 9 runs, and Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers pitching staff gave up 7 runs yesterday. Not a great math, but that's 22 runs in 3 games to the Padres. That's the Padres' output for most months, okay? Not going through in a 3-day series. So what's going on in Southern California? The Dodgers can't hit. They can't pitch. There's now 7-8 on the season. And so the Dodgers, are you kidding me? This is what $2 billion buys you?
This is surprising. I mean, talent-wise, I mean, even last year when they made all these, they brought in all these players, they were brought in to make a big push for the National League West with the Giants, again, with their style of play, just kept on keeping on and ultimately ended up winning the World Series last year. So this Dodger team, like the Angels, the other team in Los Angeles, Anaheim officially, they both continue to underachieve. I know it's a long season, and I think both teams will still be there in the end, okay? I really do.
Right.
But it's surprising because they're losing to an inferior team. We know the Padres are a light-hitting team. The surprising part has been the Dodger pitching staff.
No, they've been terrible. And if you combine the two franchises together, they're 11 of 18 with a payroll combined of $340 million going into this season with those two franchises. And now the Dodgers have a day off today, so they can't lose today. But then they got a weekend series in Baltimore, interleague play at Camden Yards. And you're right, they're not pitching well. And whether it's the Korean kid, Josh Beckett, Billingsley, obviously Kershaw's now 1-2. And I should say 2-2 on the season is Clayton Kershaw. And you have Greinke out, so that brings in Chris Capuano. We know the Angels are a mess with their pitching staff. And I guess both franchises should be chastised for not having a bullpen. Now, people, Dodger fans can say, well, Don Mattingly must still work for it. One guy said, Mattingly must still be on the Yankees payroll because he's not managing very well at all. It seems to me they make very precarious decisions when it comes to lineup, when you sit guys versus when you rest guys. Chris, you're in a horrible slump right now. Matt Kemp, I should say, did not play yesterday in their game, and you're replacing him with Skip Schumacher, who's a nice defensive player, but he's not nearly the player of a Matt Kemp. And I don't, if my team's struggling, I might juggle the lineup around, but my superstars are playing unless they're telling me I can't play. So the Dodgers are right now full of excuses, and excuses don't work for me when it comes to baseball. Get out and win the games you're supposed to win. Even with their subs, they should be able to beat the Padres 1 of 3 games. They've lost 4 straight and 5 of 6.
The summer of 1997, where were you? Michael Jordan, he was fighting, taking on the Utah Jazz Game 5 NBA Finals. June of 1997. This is just coming out, which is interesting because there's been a lot of speculation over the years, and you might be saying, wow, why are we talking about something that happened in 1997? I'm about to tell you. Are you kidding me? Remember the game? Michael Jordan, basically on his deathbed. I mean, he was really struggling. They said he had the flu-like symptoms. Something was going on. The guy just was not up to snuff. But yet, come to find out, there's been a lot of speculation from his trainer now saying, listen, Game 5, he scored 38 points. But again, it was a heroic effort by Michael Jordan. Pippen was helping him off the court. You know, we've all seen the towel over his head on the bench. He could barely sit up. A great, great effort by Michael Jordan. The Bulls knocked off the Utah Jazz in pivotal Game 5 in 1997. But his trainer has said now, hey, listen, forget the stomach virus. Forget flu-like symptoms. He felt like he was poisoned. And that has to do with Park City, Utah, all right? The word on the street has it that it's late at night. Michael Jordan's hungry. The players, the coaches are hanging out. Nothing's open. I've been to Park City, Utah. They ordered a pizza, and they thought it was a little bit suspicious because five men delivered the pizza. Are you kidding me? Michael Jordan was the only one who ate, and the next thing you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, he's calling the trainer. I'm not feeling too well.
Five guys to deliver a pizza. Must have been a big pizza.
I'm guessing.
Yeah,
right.
Well, interesting. Because Jordan says, I felt like I was partially paralyzed the night before from this pizza. Now, when you order, if you're Michael Jordan and you order a pizza, bring it up to room 504, last name Jordan. Are you telling them who you are when you order a pizza? Or are you calling it the trainer's name? That would be Smith, please.
I guarantee he didn't say Jordan, but I also know they had been there for a few days, so they knew who was there and who the pizza was for. It was for the players. Right. So, again, it's just hearsay. But, again, it's interesting. Interesting that it's coming out now as opposed to 97, even though there was speculation at that time.
Right. I'm more interested in the non-call on the push-off to get the open jumper to win the series.
Well, that was June 15, 1998. I was there. Okay. It was interesting because I had actually worked an angle at the – it's Sunday. It was a Sunday game per the networks, so it's Mormon country in Utah. It's
right.
Game 6, June 15th, 1998. This is a year later. I'm at the game, and I scalped a ticket, and then I bought a ticket for face value for $22, but I scalped a ticket 8 rows off the field, off the court. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to sell this $22 face value ticket from the Raptors. I'm going to keep it because this could be Michael Jordan's last game. And lo and behold, what happened? You know, it was a 3-point Jazz lead late in the game, 40 seconds to go. John Stockton missed a three. Jordan steals the ball, came down, made a basket. Now it's a 1-point game. And then they missed another shot, Stockton. And then the Bulls come down, and that's where the push-off took place. And, yes, it was an offensive foul. It was a push-off. Brian Russell got hosed on that call or no call. Jordan hit the shot. I had a great view of the shot live from Utah. And then the reason that I was able to get not one but two tickets for me personally for that game was because, again, everyone's in church.
And you said
in Salt Lake City.
So you were the guy giving him the guilt trip.
That was
you
me.
You really should be in church. I need to go to the game because I'm a heathen from Las Vegas.
Well,
can you please let me have your ticket?
I'm not proud.
And I think God would be very disappointed if you overcharged me for this ticket.
So I went to the game, and again, what a great game, a great finish. Michael Jordan came through again, and I kept this unused ticket thinking, wow, this is quite a collector's item from a memorabilia standpoint. Being at Jordan's last game, the greatest basketball player on the planet, memorable game, game-winning shot, unused ticket. This thing will be worth a lot of money one day.
$22.
Until
about 2 cents.
Until a couple, 3 years later, he decides to be the man for the Washington Wizards, and he decided to become the player coach. So he came out of retirement just so I would get hosed on my unused ticket.
Yeah, well, now what's a ticket worth for the Washington Wizards with Michael Jordan?
Maybe $3.
Yeah.
On a good day.
That might be $3 too much.
I would agree. I would agree.
It's a piece of paper.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on Vegas Video Network, KSHP AM 1400 Radio, Las Vegas. We're here Monday through Friday, Las Vegas time from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Scott Pritchard, founder of PritchardsPicks.com. Check me out, VegasInsider.com and RefPicks.com. Compliments of Tim Donaghy, the former NBA official. Today I'm excited. I'm going to get together with my good buddy Lem Banker doing a video right from his house today at 12 noon Las Vegas time. I'll be posting bits and pieces of that on YouTube and or my site. Lem Banker, as we know, icon. Guy is 85 years old. The guy is physically fit, works out, lifts weights every day. He's 85. I'm 48. I'm pretty sure he could kick my butt.
I think that line is long of guys that kick your butt.
And even a few ladies. Even a few
exactly.
Ladies. Don't ask me how I know. But, yeah, Lem Banker, an icon. The guy came to town in 1958, came to Las Vegas, broke.
It's a great story.
Went on to make millions of dollars, documented on countless TV interviews, radio interviews. We had dinner at an Italian restaurant here, Wallapai and Desert Inn, Mastroianni's. I believe I'm at liberty to say where we were. And one of the Maloof boys, brothers, came in and, you know, unexpectedly, all over Lem Banker's, you know, and then a doctor. We were having dinner, and a doctor who saved Lem's life, quadruple bypass surgery back in 95, was there. But I'm just telling you that Lem Banker is loved in this town. He's an icon. He was a former friend of Lefty Rosenthal, who was portrayed in the movie
Casino,
okay, yeah. As he was the sportsbook director at
Robert
the Stardust.
De Niro character.
Exactly right. So just a wealth of information and a true gentleman, sharp as a tack at age 85. I can't wait to see the guy again later today.
Yeah, that's great. We'll come back tomorrow with some stories.
Right on.
For everybody.
Always.
He's got lots of them, I'm sure, going through. And that's the great thing about Las Vegas. We still have the pioneers of Las Vegas. We're not really an old town in that regard that are still around. And one of the great things about Las Vegas is the stories of Vegas in the 50s and 60s and 70s to where Vegas is now, where most of us have only been in Vegas for 15 to 20 years. The vast majority of us recently moved late 1980s. And there's a lot of you know, local guys that have been around for a long time. But it's just great to be able to close that gap and share those stories.
I bet college and pro football, college and pro basketball, Major League Baseball, women's basketball. One thing I bet very little, I will step out on an NHL hockey total. Every now and again, my buddy Dink, I'll talk to him about hockey. He's a hockey guru. Check out the movie Lay the Favorite, starring Bruce Willis as my good buddy Dink. All-star lineup. It's on. It's out on Netflix right now. Check it out. Lay the Favorite, sports betting movie. Vince Vaughn, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Rebecca Hall. As I mentioned, Bruce Willis plays my buddy Dink. The reason I bring this up is I want to talk hockey with you.
I haven't heard that one. What is it?
It's called Lay the Favorite.
All right.
There's a character, Scott, in the movie. You didn't know this?
I did not know this.
I've told the whole world, for crying out loud.
Well,
but have you been living under a rock?
Apparently, I'm not part of your world.
Yeah, it's Lay the Favorite.
How long ago was this?
It came out. The movie came out in the fall. All-star lineup, Bruce Willis, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Rebecca Hall. Is
the fall of 2012?
Of this past year,
1812.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
And
okay,
it's been out on video on demand, and today you can pick it up on Netflix. But it's about the underground world, professional sports betting in Las Vegas.
Oh, cool.
Dink is the gentleman who joins me on the Strip three times a year. We do sports betting seminars. Been the best of friends since 1993. It's one of those things, my friend, where plumbers tend to hang with other plumbers. Professional sports bettors hang with other professional sports bettors.
Right, right.
And lawyers hang with other criminals.
Exactly.
I should take that back. I don't mean to insult criminals.
I agree with you. That's a good point. Yes.
Well, let's talk hockey, because you're a
let's
hockey guy.
I love,
like my buddy Dink.
I love the frozen biscuit. You know, last night, by the way, was the first sporting event in Boston since the Boston Marathon. And the Bruins played the Buffalo Sabres in that game. And, it, you know, we've seen NHL, Chicago Stadium, where the crowd roars during the national anthem. And they're trying to just make a ton of noise. And it's a great environment at old Chicago Stadium. They do it now at the United Center as well. It's not quite the same as it was at the stadium. And it happened right after 9/11, where the crowd was just going crazy in Chicago right after that when the Blackhawks played. Well, last night in Boston, it was basically an a cappella version by 20,000 people singing the national anthem, and it gave you goosebumps. It brought a tear to your eye. It was absolutely a wonderful moment of American spirit going on last night. And how did the Bruins thank them? They went out and lost the game 3-2 to the Buffalo Sabres in overtime.
They didn't like the singing?
They had the lead, and they lost it late, and they lost in overtime. It was just a great night last night at the beginning of the game, and I thought the Bruins would come out emotionally and just roll the Buffalo Sabres last night. That didn't happen. But it was still a pretty neat atmosphere last night.
I think that's great. Awesome.
Yeah. You can see that on YouTube.
I'm going to check it out for sure. Again, I watch very limited hockey, but I'm interested to check out that story. So thanks for sharing, Brett. This is the part of the show where Brett Grant and I together put money into your pocket as we put you on the right side.
Well, recapping yesterday, it was Wednesday. Now, here we go back to today. I didn't win my play yesterday. So you will have a chance to gloat because your game did win yesterday. I'm going to stick to frozen biscuit and give you a hockey play today. I'm gonna go to St. Louis, where the Phoenix Coyotes play the St. Louis Blues tonight. The Coyotes are one of the down teams with six games to play, will not make the playoffs in the NHL, where the Blues are currently the seventh seed and playing much better, and their scoring touch is coming back for them, especially at home. They've played each other twice this year, and the Blues have won both games by 3 goals, 6-3 and 3-0. The Blues currently are getting great goaltending from Brian Elliott and Jake Allen, the rookie goaltender there. Where Phoenix, I think they're more playing out the string, although they are 5 wins in their last 10 games. The Blues have won 7 of their last 10 games, and they have taking care of the Coyotes. It's just a very good matchup for the Blues. So I'm going to take the Blues on the puck line plus $1.70 today to win the game by 2 or more goals at home against the Phoenix Coyotes.
-1.5 plus 70 cents. That's Brett's play. We'll check it out tomorrow. Now to recap my play from yesterday, the Tigers taking on Seattle. The total was 7. You had to shade it -15, -20 cents. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. And as you can tell, I haven't missed too many meals. Easy winner. The game went 14 innings, 2-1 final. Wow. How do these sports books stay open?
They won't let you bet enough.
That's tough, you know, because whenever I get cocky, I usually get punch right in the face.
Right.
But I never learn, so I'm going to keep gloating. I'm going to come
back. You do have a face for radio.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Thank you. It's a lot funnier when I say it.
Okay.
Interleague baseball game today. The D-backs taking on the New York Yankees. We have Corbin, a lefty, taking on Hughes. And what's interesting about this, the total for this contest is 8.5. And I'm thinking, wow, why is this total so low? Because Hughes, we know, 0-2, ERA up over 10. The lefty, Corbin, has been off to a good start, ERA of 1.50. But check out this whip, walks, hits per innings pitch for Hughes, 2.71. 8.5, wow. I love the over. So my right side is the D-backs versus Yankees game, 8.5, Red Rover, Red Rover. I love the over. Ring the ringer. Oh, see the cashier.
He's getting better at that. Wait, I got to clap for you.
Winning cures everything. You know what it is?
Is that what it is?
Everything's working. My food tastes better. My girlfriend looks better. When you're winning, life is good.
That's good. That's good.
But the nature of the beast, 1 week you're eating caviar, the next week you're borrowing for grocery money.
Or scrounging through the garbage cans here at KSHP.
It's true. It's true. So what else you have going on today, young man?
Well, not too much. You know, I do get excited this time of the year towards the end because next week the NFL draft, and I'm always interested as the draft gets closer to see what kind of jockeying might happen with regards to draft movement and trades and things of that nature. Last year we had the big blockbuster trade where the Rams traded down so the Redskins could get Robert Griffin III, and they gave up a truckload of draft picks, and the Rams are still going to be harvesting those draft picks with two first-round picks this year. And as a Rams fan, I'm looking forward to see what they can do going into it. And, of course, from a gambling perspective, season win totals based on the draft and the schedule, by the way, which will be coming out later today. I don't quite see it yet. I've been looking around because the schedule should be coming out for the NFL season today. So if you're looking for your favorite team, you should be in good shape to find that.
Great.
As well.
Well, we talked about Tim Donaghy. refpicks.com. I'm on the site, featured one of the handicappers. I'm going to have Tim on the show one of these days. Also, we talked about Lay the Favorite, the movie. Dink, played by Bruce Willis. My friend Beth, played by Rebecca Hall. And I'm going to have Dink and
Beth. Who
played you? Actually, a nondescript character. I was in...
Terrible, Scott.
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, Scott Whitney, the executive producer, who knows less about
Scott
sports.
Only has a head. You know, you never see his body, just his head.
He knows less about
there
he is. He knows less about sports betting than my daughter Skyler, and she's 10. But I do respect
and she's pretty good. She hit 54% last year, by the way.
But the critics for this movie, Lay the Favorite, the critics hated the movie, and Scott Whitney hated the movie. So I'm begging you, the viewers and the listeners, to rent the movie to see just how bad it is. All-star lineup, are you kidding me? Bruce Willis, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Rebecca Hall, Vince Vaughn. But yeah, there is a character, Scott, in the movie. I was there in Dink's sports betting office. This movie was based on things that happened, world of professional sports betting, underground world, back in 2000, 2001 in that ballpark. You're listening to The Odds Couple. We're here Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 11 a Las Vegas time. My name is Scott Pritchard, featured on PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com, Tim Donaghy's site, RefPicks.com. For Brett Grant, again, we're asking that you please tune in Monday through Friday. We'll catch you tomorrow. Have a good day.